Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Mr. Sulu, this is not an intruder. You're really getting carried away with this thing. I appreciate you do a great job and that you're so diligent, but intruder, it's not an intruder. It's our guest tonight. It's the author, Heather Tullis. Is it Tullis or Tullis? Let me start off by saying, I'm sorry if I said it wrong.
No, it's Tullis. You're right.
Tullis. Okay. Thank you. I could have got that while we were chatting before, right? But Tullis, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you. I'm really glad that I could be here.
So am I. And we're here to talk about your newest book, and you're a rather prolific writer. And the newest book is called Hello Again. And
yes.
I've put that picture up a lot. In fact, actually, I've got to admit, recently I had I was promoting your book on a different show with a different guest. And I ended up putting your picture of your Hello Again on there in the slideshow that goes on. And that's the one that came up. So whenever you saw this guy's name and his band, the band on the show would have a picture of Hello Again, Heather Tullis.
I bet you loved that.
And I thought, yeah,
I love
it
that.
It is all. And I thought, you know, I could change it, but it's such a good-looking cover. So why
Thank
not?
You.
So tell us about Hello Again.
For a few years now, I've been wanting to write a book that had to do with a garden. I'm a gardener, and when we moved to this little town where I live now, we got involved with the community garden, and it really, helped, inspire me for this series. And so my character has this younger brother who's autistic, and she wants something for him to get involved in, and he really likes gardening, and so she decides she's going to start this community garden and all of the problems that come along with it. So it's a
–
turned out
that
really
that
well
implied.
Like that. Yes. Starting
so,
with finding somewhere to hold it.
Community garden. And for people that don't know, what is a community garden?
A community garden is a place where people who live in the area can rent a plot of land so that they can grow their own vegetables during the summer. Sometimes the plots will vary in size depending on where you're at. Sometimes they're fenced, sometimes they're not. Ours is run by one of the high school coaches, and it's on somebody's, a private person's property that they have let us use it for the garden. So the kids have plots that they use, and they grow the food for the food pantry and stuff, but there are also plots for the people in the community to use for their own families, which is really fun.
Yeah, how nice. And to get, you know, fresh food that you've grown instead of having to, people always, I think I saw something on a cartoon recently you may have seen. You know, people are becoming so much more concerned. There seems to be a heightened awareness about healthy food, although some of us, like me, I grew up with, we grew our own vegetables. And which back then I thought was such a chore because, you know, when other people were having a good time out playing, riding their bikes, I was having to hoe the garden and, you know, shell butter beans and stuff. And then later, though, it was much later that I realized, you know, how good the food was and how much better it tasted than what other people were probably eating out of a can and better for me. But
so true.
And I've seen a cartoon where there's a recently I was showing my husband, I said, it's a cartoon with a man and wife, and they're at the bank, and they said, well, we wanted to take out a second mortgage on our house. And they go, oh, really, why? Well, we want to start eating organic. So...
Yes, eating organic food from the store can be kind of pricey.
Yeah, no kidding. So it seems to be such a nice trend and a nice movement, you know, for people to do. And it also seems to be a way to, I don't know, I guess maybe friends of mine that do this kind of thing with me, it's good just to sort of talk, and you're not distracted by any sort of communication devices. Nobody's going to be answering their phones. You know, everybody puts everything away, and we get to the garden. And it's just a nice time to commune and enjoy each other and all that, too. So that's good. And then how interesting, though, to that the main character uses this as a way to keep her autistic brother, you know, out of trouble, give him a little something different to do, some kind of something to get put his attention on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of an inner city community where they're at. I mean, it's a smallish town, but it's not in a great part of town and in the book. And so, you know, there are not that many things for kids to do these days. They kind of don't. I mean, when they get older in the high school, there's not enough time in the day. But when they're kind of in that middle school age, you know, there are a lot of there's a lot of need for good activities for kids. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's and hello, and the main character is Piper Daniels.
Yes,
and
she is.
So,
she works at a dental office, and she was raised by her mom, and with her little brother. Her dad died when she was a kid, and so they're just kind of like working and trying to keep it together and. She has some really great friends that go in with her on the garden and help make it happen.
And then, so,
and of course,
so at some point, oh, go ahead. Sorry,
I was going to say, of course, along the way, she runs into her old flame, and
oh yeah,
he owns the property, and so, or his company does. So she has to work with him in order to get approval to use the land.
Oh, and you know, you can just see this now. I mean, I don't know how you have it cast in your mind, because I'm, you know, how you see the people, but I don't know. You can almost see it, like, I don't know why this came to my mind today, just from the plot. Like, okay, this Piper Daniels, and how old is her brother?
He's 14.
14. Okay.
He's 14. I modeled him after a friend's son who's autistic, who's about the same age. So.
Okay, so and his name is?
Oh, my gosh, just because you asked me. Totally spaced it. I'll come up with it in a second. Sorry.
What's his name? Okay, little brother's caught vandalizing, so Piper wants to find something affordable that'll redirect his energy. And then this happens, and then, of course, what happens when she goes and gets into the planning with the garden is her old flame, Reese Stone, the guy that broke her heart. And I don't know, I guess for some reason I was thinking about the book this morning, and it just, I don't know why, I saw Jennifer Aniston and Matthew McConaughey, maybe. I don't know,
that would
maybe
be awesome. She's a redhead, so a red-headed Jennifer Aniston might work.
Yeah, yeah. I think she could
pull
that off.
Matthew McConaughey, that's a pretty good match. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot. And yep. I think weren't they in the movie, what was it, Failure to Launch or something? I never saw the movie, but I remember seeing that. But I don't know why I could just see them in this together. I could just see the characters in them. And, yeah, so then he has to meet her. Goes to the property, and he finds out about the, you know, the brothers, the reason, and so forth. But and also, you and of course then he's going to give is there going to be a chance during this where he gets to tell her why he broke her heart, or is he blaming her or whatever, or does she think
no,
she dodged a bullet? God knows, anything could happen, could be going on.
He does eventually get a chance to get her to sit down and talk, and eventually they work through it. So, but first they have to figure out, how, you know, along the way, someone else wants the property and stuff. So there's some interesting twists and turns. But
and I found, if this is not, I don't want to be letting too much out of the bag, because this book is just such a, it's just such a great plots and subplots. And your characters are so well, you know, fleshed out and defined here. They're just so real with their faults, with their good points and their faults and their challenges. They're real people that we can all, we either know it, or we feel like we've been through some of the situations, or we know, either if we don't know what she's going through, we know somebody who does. And so I love that about Hello Again. But you also, and I hope you're not just kidding us, not just teasing, it says that this is the first, Hello Again is the first book in the Garden
series.
Oh, no,
yes.
Wait. Yeah, that's it. So it's a series. It's going to be a series. Yeah? Yay!
Yes, definitely. Her friend Maddie gets the next book, and it'll be kind of in this later in the winter as they're kind of getting things ready and setting up the greenhouse for the, because she's a school teacher, so they're going to use it for her class to teach different classes in the greenhouse. So I'm really excited. I've got that one started, and I'm working on that, and it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, this is cool. This is kind of like, I guess, I've never read a lot, but something I've read, Nora Roberts, how she has different books, and that way you get to keep with the characters but not go through the same thing. You get to go through different friends or family members that you've already come to love and enjoy.
Yes.
And I feel like you're still hanging
out
with them.
That's the kind of, I love to read series so that I can get to know more characters better and stuff like that. So that's the way I usually write. Almost all my books are connected to other books and other characters.
Nice. Very nice. And readers, but then again, you're a voracious reader by your own admission. So yeah, you know what, you understand, you know what it's like. It's like those little memes with the pictures and the woman crying. It's like, oh, I don't want the book to be over. You know, that sadness. And so, but no,
yeah.
you keep us in the world. You know, all we have to do is open the book or click on the Kindle or whatever, and there you have it for us. So that's nice. Now let me ask you this: you have, if I could go back a bit, you've written parts of series. What is the Echo Ridge anthology? Tell us the Christmas Kiss.
Right.
Tell us about that.
That one is up for pre-order right now. It releases on November 3rd. And several friends and I got together and put together this anthology. All of the stories intermix. So we all have characters from each other's stories in the book, and they all happen at the same time, pretty much. And they're all kind of set around this old-fashioned department store, like an old Macy's or something. And there's this tree that's called the Hope Tree, where people in the community can buy presents for people who are less fortunate. And so all of the stories have this hope tree that kind of acts as a catalyst along the way at some point in their little romances. So they're cute little fun stories. They're about 35,000 words, so you could sit down and read them in a couple of hours. And I'm really, really excited about this project. We're already planning for our next one.
Okay. I don't think I've ever known, I've known things where different people, you know, take turns writing a chapter, like Naked Kay the Manatee that had, what was it, Amy Tan and was it Carl Hyacin and different people in it. But I've never, this is new to me to have a series, and each book is by a different author. But they're all
it's becoming more common. Yeah, they're becoming a little more common. I have a friend series where they're all one leads to the next. They're not all at the same time, but they one leads to the next. And then I have some other friends who wrote a series that's like all a book group, and they all happen kind of at the same time. There's four that happen at one time and then four that happen at another time later on. So it's something that's growing in popularity, especially since indie publishing makes it so much easier to get a book out there without having to worry about we have three different publishers and how do we collaborate on that. So
I mean, first of all, I mean, think about this and the way you describe it, it sounds absolutely enchanting. But you've got, let me name the authors, Cami Checkets, Lucy McConnell, Connie Sokol, Heather Tullis, Rachel J. Christensen, or Rachel. You've got five authors. How do you do it? I'm just fascinated by the process because, I mean, the covers are great, and the way you describe it sounds great. It's coming out for this Christmas, right?
Yeah.
How difficult is it to pull that many stories together, books, five authors, and to have the things connect such a way? Did you guys all go off on a little girls' camping trip one weekend or a hotel trip away from the husbands and kids and do it? Or
I wish. No. we most of us got together at a conference. A couple of them started to talk, and they started inviting people in to join while we were at a writing conference because we all know each other. And then most of it was done via email. So we had like a map of the city so that we could make sure that we didn't start saying that things were in places where they weren't. And we had our calendar, like a Google calendar, where we put all the events so that we could track and discuss each other's events from the book and stuff. So it just took a lot of collaboration, and then we read each other's stories so we could make sure that the details worked, especially where our characters crossed over.
This
so
fantastic.
It's a little more work than when you're writing by yourself, but it's a lot more fun in some ways because it's you don't very often get to work with other people as a writer. Most of the time I do my writing and my editing on my own. And then, you know, I send it out to readers to look at and give me feedback, but it's different when you're collaborating with them and you kind of all have the same vision. So it's been really, really fun.
If I could just read the paragraph that describes the collection, it says Christmas Kisses is a collection from five best-selling and award-winning authors set in the snowy town of Echo Ridge, in upstate New York. These inspirational romances are sure to delight you while you sip cocoa by the fire and listen to Christmas carols. And like I said, and even you know, the covers are great and just the song. It does. I think enchanting is a word. I have to repeat that because it's just how it sounds. And yours, I think your main person is, a guy who says, One Winter Night by Heather Tullis. Jonah Owens thought moving to Echo Ridge to open his art gallery would solve all his problems. And he has to sell his grandma's house, and then he has other complications. And then his neighbor's got a bunch of farm animals that apparently seem to get on his nerves. And I believe that neighbor is Kaya Fiedler.
That's right.
Yeah.
So he's frustrated because people don't want to buy the house next to her because she has some horses. But she does equine therapy, like with children who have disabilities or autism or other kinds of things. And so she has to have her horses because that's her job. And mm-hmm. So that's one of the things they have to kind of overcome along the way. So that's fun.
That's great. Well, now, so that sounds fantastic. And I love, too, the idea of Kaya, is it Kaya or Kaya Fiedler?
Kaya
Fiedler.
Yep.
The job with animal therapy and using horses, because that's just something I've been reading about in the last couple of years. And that's another cool thing is when books introduce you to, you think, you know, you're reading a story that's fiction, and yet you learn about things that are actually true and legit, part of the real world, part of what's going on, whether it be food or a place or things like this, you know, new therapies people are using. So that's pretty fascinating. Do you know people? How did you research that?
There's not a huge amount of time because it's a short book to this that where we're spending a lot of time with the animal therapy itself. But I started reading about it 15 years ago probably, or a little more, when I was working in a newspaper and we had done some highlighted, like some articles on a local group that was doing animal therapy. And so that's where I started kind of thinking about this. And then it just seemed like a really natural fit for this storyline. She also does some she has some goats and some chickens and stuff. And so she does like animal therapy with all of them basically on different levels, which is really different. I think people they think of, you know, therapy dogs.
Yeah.
They don't think of therapy goats or therapy chickens. But those they're actually used in the therapy type setting for a lot of people. So.
Yeah, and that's news to me. So, no, I had no idea. Well, this is pretty fascinating. Yeah, and then, of course, as a book publisher, I keep thinking about, oh, all kind of great connections you can use to promote the books with this, you know, with a therapy goat, therapy chicken. I mean, you know, the art galleries, possibilities are endless. But now, now, unless there's something else you want to tell me about the other authors of the Christmas Kisses book and the Echo Ridge anthology, let's talk about the DiCarlo Brides series.
I love the DiCarlo Brides series. It's been so, so much fun. I started out wanting to write a series where the people had a connection of some kind, but I didn't necessarily want them to have like grown up together in the same house. And so I spent like months coming up with different scenarios, and I finally settled on this one where this guy is this philanderer and he has like six kids by five different women and they don't know about each other. Or at least they don't know about all of each other. And so when he dies, he leaves in his will that he wants them to, like, put together this, he's got this hotel, because he owns a hotel chain that is about to open, and he wants them to run the hotel together and live together. And he also has kind of, like, picked out some guys for them, but he doesn't tell them, because that would be bad. And so he kind of puts them in each other's paths, and they're like a really diverse group of women from kind of different backgrounds and different temperaments, and it's just so much fun. So I finished that series, but I'm kind of working on some kind of spin-off series in the same community, because I have a lot of readers who want to keep reading about what's going on in Juniper Ridge. So,
okay, so let's get. He's got daughters, different mothers, don't all know each other, or some do, some don't, some know, whatever. Tell me about how different these girls are, if you don't mind. There's Cammie DiCarlo, Sage, Lana. Tell us about these gals and what makes each one of them different.
Okay, so Cammie and Lana were sisters. They were with their dads. They're the ones that were born to his wife. And they grew up with the money, but they've been like in the middle of the hotel business their whole lives, because they started like making beds when they were kids, even though they, you know, were upper crust. Their dad still like got them in on the ground floor, you know, in housekeeping as soon as they were old enough. So, but they're very much kind of more of a social, they've been used to that kind of life. Sage, her mom is like, she owns a organic farm, and they live, you know, on the land, and she's she actually has like a second sight. So she's very much more like Earth Mother. And then Rosemary has kind of an inner city attitude, which is really fun. She's a chef. She's gone to culinary school, and she's been in Europe to study under masters and stuff, but she still has that kind of inner city attitude and, you know, don't touch me. I can totally do it on my own type of thing. And then in Wild Hearts, Sorry. As soon as you put me on the spot, I'm like, oh, what's her name?
Sorry.
Nope, that's totally fine. Wild Hearts, the character, also grew up in a little bit higher class house, but she knew that her stepfather was the stepfather, that he wasn't her dad. And Delphi, yeah, short for Delphinium. Can't understand why she goes by Delphi instead, right? And she's like a wedding coordinator. So she's kind of like Ice Princess-ish, but she's actually been, anyway, I don't want to tell secrets before they come out.
Okay.
She's a lot more standoffish from the group. It takes her a long time to kind of melt and get to know people and give them a chance. So they're all just kind of different from different areas and different places, and they all knew who their dad was and spent time with him and stuff growing up, but they didn't all necessarily. There's very big different backgrounds, which makes for a really interesting mix.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, why the names are so different too. Jonquil and
Jonquil.
Delphi. Yeah.
Yep. And so they're all named after plants or flowers because their dad was a horticulturist. Cami's from Camellia, and you know, so they're all. That was kind of one of the things that pulled them together.
Hey, so let me ask you this. Does each one of the sisters have just a little bit of Heather in them, in their personalities? Just a little bit.
All of my characters have a little bit of Heather in them. Different bits. Everyone has a little bit different bits of Heather in them. But I don't think that you can write a completely honest character if it doesn't have a little piece of yourself in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of them have my independence and some of them have, you know, my love of flowers and some of them have other things, but they all have a little bit of me in them because that's how one of the things I have to do to help keep them real.
Of course. I like that. I remember the writer of or creator of Designing Women, the show that was popular in the 80s, said each one of those four characters was a part of her own personality. And I thought, yeah. You can see that everybody's got their time when they want to be the beauty queen like Delta Burke, or want to be stand-up, you know, feminist like Dixie Carter, or each person there. So, yeah, I think that's cool. And it keeps it real it's sort of like you've, as the author, they say the author has to bleed onto the page, and like you've given each one just a little bit of your DNA or a little bit of you to keep them very real for us. That's nice. I'm going to do, if you step away, I'm about to play a song. Right here, we're going to stop for a little break, have some music, and talk to about some of my sponsors. And I'll let you go and, go look over the garden or something. And or autograph some books, get some tea, make a cocktail, whatever. And in the meantime, I'm going to play a song by my friend Lisa Daniel. I'll be back. We'll be back in about, 4 or 5, 10 minutes with Heather Tullis. And now Lisa Danielle and Farewell.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yeah, that was Don't Know Why by Savannah Allday. And before that, you heard Farewell from Lisa Danielle. And if you've listened, you know Lisa Danielle and Savannah Allday are two of the fabulous artists featured on the Macon Music Volume 1 out of Macon, Georgia, CD produced by my good friend and yours, Joey Stuckey of Shadow Sound Studios. And if you like those songs, believe me, every song on there is great. All you have to do is go to the website Newtown Macon. That's N-E-W-T-O-W-N, Macon, M-A-C-O-N, as in Macon, Georgia. And that you can download that CD for free. Huh? How often does that happen? Let me tell you about a couple of other cool things I found out. Now, you know Madam Perry loves you. I do. And anytime I find out about really cool things in people, I bring it straight to you. Now, lots of people I know, some people are so far ahead of me. Okay, let me correct that. Most people are so far ahead of me technology-wise, I'll never keep up. I just hope that they like me enough to kind of help me out and drag me along with them. And then there are other people who know about my level or some less. Well, let me tell you, I met this cool guy, extremely cool guy named Matthew Stover. Now, Matthew has a podcast. And it's a weekly podcast. It's not even 5 minutes long, so it's short. And, how many times do you hear me say it's a short attention span world? But what his podcast does, it's called Tech for Better Life. Okay, Tech for Better Life. And every week on this five-minute podcast, Matthew Stover tells you something, gives you something about a tech tip, an app, or a gadget that can improve your life. He also helps to educate consumers about the best tech to buy. As he says on one of his most recent episodes, he discerns the difference between an Android and iPhone. Other episodes, he includes clarification about the different components in a computer or some great keyboard shortcuts you should use every day. And if you go to, and of course these are free to download, but if you go to, I think, Stitcher or iTunes, Apple.com, the podcast for Tech for Better Life, and listen, don't worry about trying to scratch that down, because you know I'll have it on this page. It's not up now. As soon as the show's over, I'm going to put it on the same page for this podcast so that you'll know exactly how to get to it. I'll also tweet it. I'll also put it on Madam Perry Salon Facebook page. But I'll give you the link to this, to a Tech for a Better Life podcast on iTunes. So here are some of the titles of some recent ones. Apple iOS versus Google's Android, three tech deals for the week. And each one I'm reading out title is a different episode. Four tips to save battery life. Twitter en français. Twitter, the basic rundown. Pinterest social network. And now you know I am the Twitter Empress. I believe I've gotten so much good stuff out of Twitter. I've met fascinating people. I've been able to put together hook up shows and things and events for clients with it. Twitter, I use it a lot. I like it because it's quick. You know, people can't ramble on it. You got 140 characters, bam, that's it. And it's quick. Nobody's going to ramble on and on and on unless you do several in a row. Let's see. There's also, he's got one about basic shortcuts, something about Pinterest. He has one about five smartphone apps you should know about using cloud storage, and that's just a few of them. So his Twitter handle is Matthew R. Stover, and I will have that for you too. So definitely check out Tech for a Better Life. I'm checking it out. It's helping me a lot. Another thing I want you to know about is, you know, jewelry. Everyone loves jewelry. And of course now there's all different kinds. You know, it used to be a thing where there was certain jewelry that was in style at the moment. And there's just like it seemed to be, at least when I was growing up, like certain jewelry was in style. Certain things were for certain days, whether it was some dress up or casual. And now people can just express themselves, their personality, their moods with their jewelry. Found this fabulous lady. Her name is Rada Mulder, and she's in Amsterdam, And our website, radhamulder.com, but you probably see I've got that on some of these blog posts, radhamulder.com. She's a jewelry designer in the Netherlands, as I said, but she sells internationally. She makes fine jewelry, which is 92.5% sterling silver and gold-filled jewelry. If you visit the website to see the new collection out now, you'll see that her designs are just very very romantic, very beautiful. In fact, when you first get on there, when you come to the website, normally I don't like websites that just automatically bring you some kind of a music or a lot of noise coming at you. For one thing, it scares the heck out of me if I'm not expecting it. Another thing, I think about when I had a desk job or somebody else, and you just, you know, maybe it's always the person who does, like me, who wouldn't net surf during the day, during the, you know, while you're getting paid. But the one time I would ever click on something, that's when there would be some kind of sounds coming out, blast over the cubicle walls and get you busted. Not Radha's Mulder's website. First thing you hear is, and you see a picture too, the masthead, is ocean waves, and you hear the sound of the beach and the ocean waves, and it's very hypnotic. But it also sets the tone for what you're going to see. She trained in jewelry design, metalsmithing, clothing design, from things that she learned from her family and going to school. And her jewelry incorporates ideas, feelings, colors, shapes, textures. She likes to put different things together and see how they translate and how they work together, how they contrast, how they complement. I'm going to put some pictures up for you to see. Some of the things that I like best were the Lotus Divine Tassel necklace. There was a peacock blue necklace. I'm going to put some pictures on Madame Perry's Salon. Actually, I already have some there on the Madame Perry Salon page on Facebook, but I'm going to put some more up too. And I think she's going to come on my show, A Little Night Music with Madame Perry, and talk to us about design. And she's also a poet, which if you look at her work, that's very apparent. All right. So you'll have all that information. Now, I want to get back to our feature guest tonight, author Heather Tullis. Heather, how you doing?
Good.
Good. You still with us? Still with me?
Yes, I am.
Good. Well, I am. I'm fascinated with your series and your books. And it's like you as I was saying before, you know, you just create such real people that we can see that seem to have some flaws like the rest of us. They're not ideals. They're real. But just the kind of people that you love them because of. Not in spite of, but because of their flaws, too, because they make you real. They make you care about them. Love the fact that you're generous enough with your time and your creativity. And your fabulous creative author brain to make longer stories or series so that you don't give us a big tease and then cut us off and we always wonder what happened to them or their friends or family. So what does this mean? Does this mean that you just don't have anything else to do, so you're going to give us all your time, or do you squeeze it in? I think you have a family and other jobs, and I want to know how you do it.
Well, right now, writing is my job. I don't have any other, I mean, I have other responsibilities, but it's my job. So, but for a long, long time, probably 10 or 12 years, I was working and writing at the same time and just squeezing it in where I could. I worked for a couple of years, graveyard shift at a gas station that was really, really quiet at night, and I was able to write at night. Which was really helpful. I was very, very productive that time. But so I always suggest that if somebody, you know, has to have a job and they want to write, that find something where they can do that. That's not very common, but that really helped me a lot. That's where I started writing the DiCarlo Bride series, actually, was at that job. So it's amazing how much more inspired I felt to write when I just had 4 or 5 hours a night at my shift and not all day long. So in a lot of ways, it's actually harder to write now that my schedule is my own than when it was when I had a full-time job.
I know how that works, eh? So, okay. But now you can't tell me because, you know, I think, I always say that I'm an armchair sociologist. Or I said that until I went to college and then learned another word, so now I'm an armchair ethnographer. But, got to have a bigger word there. But, you know, with a job, I think we can see, if you're a writer, if you're a creative person, doesn't matter where you are, what kind of job you're in or situation, you become an armchair sociologist and watch people. And you had to have gotten some little bits of cool snippets of that job, too.
Yes, I did. I've had lots of different jobs and watched lots of different people. And I think, you know, when you're a writer, then everything that you learn, everything you see is kind of training. It's an opportunity to get to understand the world better. And so, you know, as long as you keep that in mind and you're like watching and you're learning all the time, then there's always something new that you can use. So even a dead end, I'm working at the gas station at night, all night job is, can be useful for helping me to be a better writer. So.
Well, I don't know, you know, totally I've looked recently for jobs, even though I'm you know, self-employed as an entertainment publicist, I kept thinking, well, you know, everybody needs a little extra something, something. And I was looking at some jobs or some part-time or some odd shift jobs, and I saw one that PetSmart, if anyone there from PetSmart is listening, please, please, I'm the girl. I'm the girl that wants to get the job that you have. Apparently there's one position at every PetSmart store for the person to work overnight with the dogs that are there. I guess maybe dogs that are, I don't know, what. It seems like they've got some animals there. Oh, that need to be taken care of and need to be watched after during the night. I don't think they keep anything like cats and dogs there, but I guess maybe the, I don't know, the worried about the gerbils and the chudwallas and the fish getting out and having a good time, like some kind of Night at the Museum type movie or something. I don't know. But that's the job
I want.
You have
to watch out for the fish. They just escaped those aquariums. They're troublemakers.
that's the job I want. I want the overnight job at PetSmart. And I keep trying to fill out the application, and apparently I can't convince them that I'm a native speaker of English and that I actually have a visa. I mean, with my accent, you know I've got to have grown up here, right, in the South. So I don't know what the problem is. I keep going through this. I keep thinking, I've got a college education, and I've got a degree in communications, but I can't seem to get through this online application. So if you know anybody, if anybody listening knows anybody at PetSmart, please tell them I want this job. Really, I'd be very good at it. I wouldn't mess with the animals or anything, leave them in funny costumes when I left in the morning, nothing like that. I'd make sure all costumes were back in their places. I wouldn't be cross-dressing the geckos or anything. Or then again, I better shut up. So if I really want this job, I think I'm putting little cowboy hats on them or something. I don't know. I think because last week when I was in North Carolina, I saw somebody driving a truck, and they had about an 8-inch long plastic stegosaurus glued under the front of the truck as a hood ornament. So it kind of made me see the dynamics of reptiles in a whole different way. So yeah, I could just put little cowboy hats on them. I'm just saying, you know, they've got to get bored. If they get bored, they're going to look kind of lifeless. If they look lifeless, nobody's going to buy them. I'm just saying, let's get a little punch here. Let's get something
to. That's right.
But enough about my wild fantasies. Back to your fantasies.
Okay.
Your hobbies, you're a gardener, but you also like to cook, I'm told.
I do. Yes, I do. I've always liked to kind of play with cooking. I remember making my first scratch cake when I was about 13. It was a complete mess, but it tasted good. So then, you know, as I just over the years, I've picked up things. My parents have an online store. They sell like Wilton cake decorating supplies. So I got into a cake decorating thing for a while, and that actually spurred some culinary mysteries where my character is a baker and stuff. So, you know, and then I like to just kind of play with different ingredients and see what happens sometimes.
Oh, okay. So do you ever get inspiration from the TV, from cooking shows? Or do you have time to watch them yet?
I don't have cable. I've never paid for cable, ever.
Ever?
So, no, never. I've never paid for cable. There was a few months when we lived in one place where we had free cable. We found out 3 months after we moved in that we had free cable and we hooked up. But other than that, we've never had cable. Right now, we don't even have an antenna, so we have Netflix. So I catch bits and pieces, but I don't do a lot of cooking shows. I really, really like HGTV when I have time, way too much, which is one of the reasons why I don't have cable, because that would be dangerous. I'd never get anything done.
I haven't had cable in a few, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, almost 4 years, and I don't miss it, because if there's anything I really want to see, you know, I just go look on YouTube or whatever. But I remember when I did have it, I would watch shows like Door Knock Dinners or whatever, where they just barge into somebody's home like they really do. I'm sure it's planned ahead. Find a few foods and put together a dinner. And so sometimes my husband will say, how do you do this so fast? I said, you know, that show really trained me. Because my husband, you know, sometimes we've lived apart when he's worked out in a different state or something. And I go to his place and go, what, you shopping like a bachelor now? So I'd have to come up with something out of it to make dinner. But what else do you, you're pretty good at creating desserts, new recipes for desserts, and I think that's fabulous. I wonder if some of your desserts while you're cooking or so forth, do you think about the different characters in your books that cook or eat or work in restaurants or hotels, and if you, I don't know, maybe sort of channel them sometimes when you're cooking.
I don't even know where I came up
with that question. Okay.
Or they're channeling me, one or the other. I'm not sure.
Okay.
You know, it. Once you start to kind of learn a little bit about different ingredients, you really start to figure out how to make things fit together and what doesn't work. My younger sister used to try and do substitutions for everything. And my mom would get a phone call, Mom, can I substitute this for that? And I was like, no, you can't. What are you trying to make? Let me help you find a better substitution. You know? So I do a lot of like checking online. What can I use instead of? And then find something that will kind of like work instead. Because I don't 100% trust my own, like, ingenuity sometimes. But especially if I'm working out of a cookbook, a lot of times sometimes I have never even used the ingredients before, but I like to try new things. Like, my friend is all about her creme brulee. She loves creme brulee. And so I've been trying to make creme brulee, and I really, really needed a pump boiler. Because the eggs get too hot and they start to cook before it like gels properly. And I've never ever gotten mousse to work. I don't know what the deal is, but one of these days I'm going to try again. So half of it is just being willing to like have it go wrong, have it not work out the way you want it to work out, and not being afraid of it.
Well, tell me, who do you like to read? What authors inspire you?
I read so many different authors, and across a lot of different genres, actually. But some of my favorites, I really love Tracy Hunter Abramson. She writes a series of kind of like military suspense romances, which is really fun. or Stephanie Black does these fantastic mysteries. She's so, so good. She always keeps me guessing, which is really, really rare. Usually I figure out the answer to the mystery before I get to the end, but I have never yet figured out the whole mystery on one of her books.
Now that's refreshing. Yes.
Yeah, it's really unusual. So, and then I just have like a lot of romance writers that I really, really love too. I lean towards more books that don't have a lot of sex in them. So most of the writers that I really enjoy are pretty much clean books. But if you like historicals, I completely adore Sarah M. Eden's books. She has some that are like Regency and some that are a little bit more, but they're just so fabulous. She just blows me away. So and then I also read in other genres outside of those two, but those are my two main ones since I write romances with a little mystery or mysteries with a little romance. So.
Okay. Well, listen, they're telling me now they're going to be cutting me off in about, 90 seconds on the show. We've got just a few minutes left. So while I've got a couple of minutes with you, I want to say to everybody, HEATHERTULLIS.com is her website, but you'll also see it on this page. And you've seen I've splashed it all over Facebook and Twitter for the last several days, and we'll probably continue to do so. You're not on Twitter, though, are you, Heather? I've had a hard time finding
you. My other pen name is on Twitter, but I don't ever use it. So I didn't bother to set it up because I just am not that active. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm like,
right.
If I'm going to do it, so.
All right. Keep in mind.
Thank you so much.
A lot of people. Well, listen, thank you very much. And I am thrilled and delighted to have met you and talked to you. You are fascinating. And your books are fabulous. And I am just, I'm going to use the word one more time because this really seems to personify you to me. I am just enchanted with you and your work. And I wish you much success. And I hope you will come back sometime.
I would love to.
Fantastic. Heather Tully.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you here on Madame Perry Salon. And next week we've got Hugh Cornwell from The Stranglers and Joe Simon from Love.
Thank you.
Bye.